comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Welcome to a brand new week as well, and welcome to summer. If you're out here in the desert southwest, we have begun summertime today. It got nice and toasty today. And we're headed off into that time of the year when you've heard me say that living in Arizona is something akin to living in, well, you're not living in hell, but it's the suburbs. And so we're headed into that time of the year. It is, however, a beautiful time of the year to come out and visit. So if you haven't been to this area, this is a good time of the year before it really, really gets hot. Quick word here about Gods in the Garden, the DVD set. Now, I told you, you know, we had an initial order of these, and within the first 48 hours that Gods in the Garden was available, it was sold out. Within the first 48 hours. All those have been shipped. We had to order a new supply of those, and that order has arrived. The first batch has already been processed and shipped, and the second batch, the final batch, is to be shipped tomorrow. Okay, so if you're waiting on Gods in the Garden, then what you need to do is just hang on a little bit longer, because if you've ordered it, it is on the way to you. And, well, it either is on its way to you or it will be tomorrow. If you're in that last group that ordered that we've processed, then it's on its way starting tomorrow. It'll go in the mail tomorrow. All right. Let me remind you also that this show depends upon you for being able to continue. And the way we do that primarily is through our members area. Now, there are people who would love to be members and can't. It's just not in the budget. They can't do it. I understand that. Then there are people who think, well, if I got to pay, I'm not going to even listen to this show. I get those emails sometimes. Okay, bye. And, you know, you can listen for free, and you can listen to the latest show for free, and you can watch the latest show for free, and there are a lot of other things you can do for free. But our members area has the archives, and the members area has chat, the members area has forums, the members area has the Video Galaxy, and other things, and we're adding to it all the time. One of the things that we have been trying to add and had anticipated already having it up was one of the videos of the live show in iPhone or iPod format. We do have the software for converting it. However, it is really awful. The quality of the video, once it's converted, is just awful. I may go ahead and post it just so you can see, but we'll keep looking for something better. We'll be back with Robert Morningstar right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Robert Morningstar. Now, he's been with us before. He's certainly no stranger to our audience. Robert Morningstar is the editor of UFO Digest. He is a UFO researcher, writer, public speaker, and martial arts instructor. Robert Morningstar, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're glad to have you. Well, it helps if I turn your volume up. Let's try that. Welcome sure. back.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
We've got you.
Okay.
All right. Robert, I think probably the most in-depth discussions that we have had in the past were when we really delved into these meetings at the UN, and we may touch on those a little bit this evening. But it's been a while since you've been with us. There have been a lot of things happening in the world of UFOs since you were with us.
Sure.
One of the things that is coming up, and I don't know that you would want to spill the beans, so to speak, here, but you are going to be announcing some awards given each year by UFO Digest, and those are coming up when, on Friday?
Well, we've been giving them out over the last couple of months, spacing them out because there are so many people to honor.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to go over a few if I may, but I have
sure.
a very important one for tonight to,
sure.
that I'd like to announce on your show.
Okay.
Well, tonight I'd like to announce that the 2009 Reporter of the Year is Angela Joyner, for her outstanding work on the Stephenville UFO incident and the way that she was able to bring a spotlight, a media spotlight, and keep the focus on that event as one of the watershed events in the history of ufology. And I honor Angela for her hard work and all the things she's gone through. And it's a pleasure to announce that Angela Joyner is UFO Digest Reporter of the Year.
Outstanding. Well, let's give her some applause for that. Well, let's see. Here we go. Congratulations, Angela. That is quite an honor. And it is much deserved. And that's tremendous. Now, you mentioned that you have some more that have already been given
certainly.
Out.
Well, you see, Angela Joyner's work was the focal point that set the stage for the evolution and development of events that cascaded, kind of a domino effect occurred once the media got on the case and it became an open issue. It prepared the way for the UN Disclosure Initiative, UFO Disclosure Initiative, that was started by the leak that was brought out by Michael Sala and myself through the work of the brothers Pickering. And the Pickering brothers are the 2009 Ufologist of the Year, along with the source, whom I nicknamed Squid, the Navy guy.
Okay.
Who had the mission to organize this thing and start the ball rolling in the bureaucratic level of the United Nations. So that kind of set fire to the whole scene. And as you recall, it was very controversial and kind of almost caused a civil war in the ufology community.
Yeah, but what doesn't these days?
Kind of strange to have experienced that. But I think it's all blown over, and the course of events over the last year have become kind of self-evident that a major policy change has occurred worldwide on the UFO issue. And we owe a lot to people like Angela Joyner and the Pickering brothers and Squid, the Navy guy. Also, I'd like to mention, we didn't give awards last year, but Leslie Kane and James Fox also have to be honored for the work they did with the National Press Club UFO Conference that they assembled. Many of the witnesses that were there from around the world have now been seen on UFO Hunters, which has done an excellent job in following up those stories. So I see this whole year as a team effort, and I have tried to help as many people as possible get their message out. Another two are the UFO Digest Awards for Best Films of the Year. One was kind of a autobiographical film, reality-based, and the other one is a science fiction story. You had the producer on your show of Alien Grey, The X-Zone, Tom Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
And the best film of the year, I took a time to view a lot of films, and Sybella Clare's A Bird's Eye View was an exceptional film. It was shown in Lachlan and the Crash Retrieval Conference there.
Yeah.
And it won Best Film of the Year there. It's a remarkable story. It told in a kind of comedic autobiography, in which Sybella was able to embed these interviews with quite a remarkable list of ufologists, starting with Jim Mars and going on with Major Filer, Richard Hoagland, who's not a ufologist, and he says, we don't do UFOs. He only does Martians and Mars. So I thought that it was an exceptionally good piece. She spent a lot of time shooting it around the world, and I think she did a fine job, and I recommend it.
And it's called A Bird's Eye View.
Serious material in a non-threatening way, lightened up by the comedy aspect of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it touches on many things, including childhood abductions, military programs to develop psychic individuals, cattle mutilations, which is not a very funny subject at all, and so on. So that movie of the year, ufologist of the year, reporter of the year, and of course another big one, I think is a big one, is the writer of the year is Robert Hastings, for what I consider to be the most important book on UFOs ever written, and that is UFOs and Nukes.
All right, now why do you consider that to be the most important UFO book ever written?
Because it brings to the forefront the most important issue regarding UFO secrecy on the parts of the United States government and Britain and the NATO nations for all these many years. And it is the exposing the fact that we do not control our own airspace, we really don't even control our own nuclear arsenal. Because the stories and the cases related in UFO nukes makes it very clear that UFOs overfly U.S. and NATO nuclear bases at will, that they can tamper with the equipment, alter the coordinates of the targeting. They have even initiated nuclear launches, which drove these poor missileers crazy and having to shut them down, which also brings home the message that we can never allow complete computerization of any of our systems, because it's the human element in these cases that Robert Hastings related. It's the human element that stopped the catastrophe. It was the ability of a human being to recognize the crisis and start pushing buttons and pulling levers and mechanically stopping a launch. So that's why I think that UFOs and Nukes is probably the most important book, in my opinion, on UFOs, because it bears the secret that they've been hiding all these years. The fact is that if we were to engage in nuclear war, we have no certainty where our missiles would land, as demonstrated by the ability of UFOs to destroy missiles in flight, to alter targeting coordinates, or to just cause general glitches in the missile systems. Referring to the missiles in flight has to do with a film that was shot of a launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base that was being filmed by Air Force personnel, and they captured on video, or on video, video now, but film then, a UFO flying alongside a missile that was doing 5,000 miles an hour and circling it across the nose cone, flashing bright lights at it that soon thereafter caused the thing to tumble and disintegrate. So these are some of the big secrets that the Air Force has kept the lid on for all so many years. But Robert Hastings is a very professional investigator, writer, a very respectable man, and he was able to convince at least four U.S. Air Force missileers to come forward and tell their stories. And as we saw on Larry King Live, and it's really, there's, you know, about the strangeness factor that we talk about in UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
There's always kind of like certain weirdnesses. Well, in this one, it's like, where did all these Roberts come from, you know? It seems like the guys named Robert have a very vested interest in getting to the truth of UFOs, because you have Robert Hastings, Robert Salas, Robert Jacobs, and so on and so forth. So it's very gratifying to see that this information is getting out and that the public is becoming aware of what's really going on. That's why I dubbed tonight's talk The State of the Skies, in which I want to get into other things, reports that I'm receiving from all around the world regarding UFO events of rather significant proportions. Some of them are actual air battles.
Well, let's do that. Let's just go ahead and move into that, because that's where I wanted to go anyway.
Sure.
Eventually this evening, so this is a good time. You're getting reports of air battles.
Yes.
And you know, we've gotten some reports here from various sources, you know, off of the internet, and I've had to say, it's pretty dramatic, but I don't know if it's true.
Right.
So let's get into that. What are you hearing about these air battles? What's the most credible one?
That you're very familiar with is the case that Dick Criswell brought to light with Kokomo.
Mm-hmm.
And you covered that in great detail the last time you had him on. And, of course, the huge explosion. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to call it a sonic boom, because nothing flew by at supersonic speed to cause a sonic boom. The object was in sight for a very long time, but things were happening in the sky and maneuvering did occur, and something apparently did crash in Kokomo. But back in 2007, at the end of 2007, I got a report from Canada, which is really a hotbed of UFO activity and has some of the best UFO researchers, investigators on the planet. And the activity in Canada is remarkable. And one of these dealt with apparently an air battle that occurred near a place called Kelowna Lake, not far from in British Columbia, where a triangular UFOs engage circular or spherical UFOs and blasted away at each other with apparently, in our vocabulary, we would say laser weapons or beam weapons. And one of the craft went down into the lake. Now, this is the first time that this next report I'm giving you comes from a couple of years ago, and recent, within 2 years, I believe. It occurred in North Carolina, where there was an air battle, and three craft came down. And my reporter informed me that, it was two of theirs and one of ours. And they found the crash sites, and they were warned off from approaching one of them, which apparently was, quote-unquote, ours. And someone who was a little bit, I would say a little foolhardy, ventured into the area where the forbidden one was and suffered some very, very unpleasant consequences. So this thing is happening, and the problem is, it seems to me it's been happening for a very long time, but for some reason it's come down into the lower atmosphere where it's plainly visible.
All right, now you said they suffered some unpleasant consequences.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about threats, subsequent paranoia, and subsequently suicide. That's all I can tell you at this time. The man was warned off one particular area he ventured in, and after that he seems to have come under scrutiny and harassment that just made him deathly afraid of something, and finally ended up with his taking his own life, which is one of the tragic consequences of investigating, going into this field and really not being prepared, you know, mentally and spiritually to deal with what surrounds these things. I'd like to say also that I'm getting reports and photographs from all over the world, including Japan. And if you go to UFO Digest, you'll see one of the reports of spatula-shaped UFOs, I guess, which we would call a triangular UFO. And I've received some fantastic photos, high-quality photos of UFO near Dulce, New Mexico, which I hope to put up soon, and I want to congratulate, while I have the thought in mind, Norio Hayakawa's Dulce base conference that he had to an overflowing audience. I think that was a very important event, and I'm very happy to hear and see that so many people attended that they had to move it to another site. So congratulations to Norio Hayakawa.
You know, and he's been at this for decades.
Oh, yeah.
He's really been at this for a long time.
Very dedicated man. Mm-hmm. This is why I really am honored to be in the UFO field with and associated with people who have such dedication and such courage. And that's what it takes to really be a serious ufologist. You have to really be willing to spend years and thousands of dollars of your time, of your money and your time, hours and hours laboring and investigating, looking for that information that makes the picture clearer to yourself and to the public.
And another thing too, Robert, people, because we don't often talk about it, people don't realize the weird attacks that come against UFO investigators, researchers, writers, journalists. When I say weird attacks, I'm not talking about some kind of little paranoid nonsense. I'm talking about very real, weird stuff, attacks that will happen to UFO investigators. Yeah. That just come from the shadows. It comes from out of the blue. You don't know where the mm-hmm. source is. But after a while, there's a pattern, and you can see the filthy fingerprints.
Yeah.
And you know where it's coming from. But it happens to all of us.
Yeah. Sometimes it's very underhanded how they operate. Sometimes it can be physical. Other times it can be mental and emotional. And other times it can be financial.
Yeah. Robert, we have to take a break. It's taking over, and we're going to lose our mics here in a few seconds. Folks, we'll be back right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Robert Morningstar. Let's go back to the phone and to Robert Morningstar. We were talking, Robert, when the break took over, about the fact that there are strange attacks that take place against UFO researchers, investigators, writers, etc. And, you know, sometimes it can just be an entry into a file somewhere. Or the absence of a file that is supposed to be there.
Or it can be actually being charged with something heinous that the person didn't do and being sent to jail and convicted framed, such as I will broach this. A friend of mine named Bob Shell, who's doing time in Virginia, is a very, very well-known ufologist, and he was framed for manslaughter by the local DA down in Virginia. And this was a double-edged grudge, because A, he was a very controversial ufologist, and secondly, he had been a whistleblower on a foundry that was poisoning a local river down in Virginia where he lived. And he worked there at first, and he saw what they were doing, and then he went to the EPA, and as I said, he was a whistleblower. And the foundry was fined, and they became very upset, and they told the town to go to hell. And they moved themselves completely out, and something like 350 people lost their jobs. And so there was a grudge, underlying grudge already against him for this. And then they framed him for the death of a young lady who was a model. And they, you know, they painted and depicted him in the most lurid manner as a pornographer, but he was actually a very gifted photographer shooting erotic photos, you know, partially naked. But they were able to load a jury with fundamentalists and paint him in the most horrible manner, all the while destroying evidence, tampering with photographs to change the dates and times on them, and on and on. I mean, the list is and I was his best friend in a way, you know, trying to console him and say, you know, like, there is justice in the world and just have faith in the system. But the system down there was so rigged that they changed, as I said, they lost forensic evidence. The defense asked for the forensic material so they could have their specialists look at it, and they got a box full of empty vials. It's just, to me, it's criminal behavior, malicious prosecution in the state of Virginia.
Now, whenever you say something like that, you know, you're opening yourself up.
Yes.
And you know, I would assume you've got the beef. You've got the evidence to back up what you're saying.
Long series of email exchanges where he was telling me what was happening, you know, to his legal team, to his lawyers, how they were replacing his lawyers. It went on for several years, and I thought for sure that nobody could ever be convicted under the circumstances that he was describing to me. And
well, listen, there are people on death row, and I'm not going to name the case, but there's one particular person on death row that, as I watched that case being reported on the news, and this person was in trial, and they were showing the evidence as being presented by the prosecution.
Yeah.
And both myself and another ex-cop had conversations about this, and we were saying, man, I can't believe they've even gone to trial with that.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did they get a conviction, they got a death sentence.
My God. Let me give you another example. I met this man myself. Back in the early 90s, there was a UFO crash in South Haven, New York, which is out near the Hamptons in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And a man named John Ford began to investigate it. He actually was able to get videos of the crash site. Immediately after it happened, somebody ran in there with a video and took some shots before the police and the military came and closed it off. So I was invited out to meet him in Long Island, and I did. And I saw some of his video. And about a year and a half later, he was brought to trial for attempted murder of a district attorney out there. And they claimed that he had gotten radioactive material in a powder form and mailed it to the DA to try to kill the DA using powdered radioactive material. Now, I don't know who can believe that, but they were able to convince a jury of 12 people that John Ford did this. And it's to me, it's just a complete railroad job that they did on him. And in Texas, mm-hmm. a very dear friend of mine, who I won't give his name, this man married a Texas lady. He adopted her family. And they found out that the next-door neighbor was sexually abusing the child, who was about 8 years old. So he and his wife went and complained to the sheriff and complained to the Child Protection Agency. The sheriff, who apparently knew the neighbor, took the girl into a room with the Child Protective Services agent, and they questioned her for an hour without the parents and without a lawyer. And while the parents who were making the complaint about the next-door neighbor sexually abusing the girl, in an hour, they came out and they charged my friend, a very well-known ufologist, with child abuse, sexual abuse. They jailed him for 3 months. The family mortgaged the house to get a bail. The DA tried for a year to get him to plea bargain, in which case they would have been very lenient, and he said, no, I am not a child molester. I will never do that, and I will never admit to that. Let's go to trial. So they went to trial, and they had a little kangaroo court trial where the judge did not allow half the character witnesses to appear because he had to go on vacation. And so he got 10 years. But hopefully, there's an appeal, and hopefully they might have some revision of that case in 2 years' time. So,
well, without me specifically addressing, any of these specific cases, just in a general way, we know that prosecutorial, they call it misconduct, that's actually crimes against the people. But that has gone on in this country for quite some time, and within the past 2 or 3 years, some pretty big cases have come to light.
Sure.
And the prosecutors have gotten into some trouble. But not before they ruined people's lives. I think when a prosecutor is found to have committed this sort of thing and people have been jailed, I really, really believe, and I mean jailed unjustly, I really, really believe strongly and would urge people to seek this kind of legislation, that such a prosecutor, usually what happens is he gets disbarred.
Right.
That's not enough. He ruined people's careers. He ruined their lives. In some cases, destroyed families by putting people in jail on false charges. And I think that the prosecutor himself at that point should lose his license to be a lawyer and should have to do the exact amount of time in jail that he caused those other people to do.
I agree with you. Yeah.
So if he had them in jail for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
then, he's got to do 3 years. If he had five people in jail for 3 years, he's got to do 3 years five times.
Yeah. Really, it's that kind of legislation that will kind of curtail that kind of behavior. But, it's really strange. People are very vindictive, and humans do abuse their power. I don't have to get into the David Koresh issue down in Texas, but that was a frame-up from beginning to end with Judge Johnson's gripe against him, So it happens in many fields, but it also happens in ufology.
It does, and every year there are some that get targeted with some kind of trumped-up charges. Mm-hmm. All right, but, you know, it's not just them against us. It's us against us in that we also have, in ufology, a tendency to eat our own, and we devour each other.
Well, that comes, I believe, out of the proprietary nature of the certain cases. People think they own the field.
Mm-hmm.
People think that their explanation is the only explanation, and honestly, no one has the whole picture. Not even the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all the files and all the research, I don't think they know half as much as people think they know. And they have an obligation to present an image of being in control and knowing everything that's going on, even when they're ignorant. And I think that's a big part of the cover-up. They don't want to admit their ignorance.
Well, yeah, but you know, and I'm not saying this in their defense. I'm just saying we, the general public, have been stricken with the same malady, and that is people feel like that it's not okay to say, I don't know. And they're nervous about saying, I don't know.
And,
you know,
understand
that. And so they try to come up with some kind of an explanation for everything. Well, some things, there's just no explanation. It's beyond us.
Right.
And it's okay to say, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I know. I like to say that I am one of those people that when I'm ignorant, I say, I don't know. And it's always kind of funny to me, the look on people's faces when I say that, like, what? How can anybody say they don't know? Well, it's a very easy thing to say, and it's kind of useful because when you say that, you usually learn something.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, another thing, too, and, you know, I thought about this as we were getting ready for you to be on the show tonight. I get emails from people who say, you know, it seems to me, you know, I listen to all these guests that you have on the show, and I hear all that information. It seems to me, you know, that there's just no way to know which is true.
Right.
But see, the point is, it may all be true. For instance, what is the alien agenda? Well, I don't think there is one. There may be 20,
mm-hmm.
or 50, or 100. You know, whatever race you happen to be talking about, they've got their agenda for why they're visiting Earth.
Right.
And you talk about a different race, well, they've got their agenda for why they are here. And there may not be the alien agenda.
Hey, you know, while we're on this subject, let me sidetrack a little bit and recommend a really wonderful movie that completely impressed me. I didn't go to see it in the theater, but about 2:30 in the morning, which is usually when I'm getting ready to go to sleep in an hour or so, I channel surf, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I have my breakfast before I go to sleep. That way I don't have to eat in the morning.
Robert, we're going to have to get that recommendation for that movie when we come back from this break, okay?
It's Happy Feet.
Happy Feet, okay.
Yep.
All right, we'll talk about it when we come back. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Don't go away. All right, welcome back. My guest is Robert Morningstar. Robert, you, when we went away for break, you were recommending that we all go take a look at Happy Feet. What's that about?
It's a very surprising film because there's a subliminal message in there. I mean, there's a superficial story about environmental concerns and penguins, cute penguins. But really the core of the story is an analogy, and they use the word alien abduction. In this case, it's the penguins that are being abducted by these strange creatures from another world with weird machines, and the strange creatures are humans, and they're tagging the penguins. They're snatching them and putting radio beacons on them so they can track them, and the parallel between alien abduction and of humans by aliens and alien abductions of penguins by humans is quite explicit. I was very surprised by the theme, the real theme of the Happy Feet movie. I couldn't stop watching it. I mean, it was 2:30 in the morning. I said, cartoon, and then I watched for a few minutes. The music was wonderful. The story is heartwarming. But at the end, there's also this other interesting thing, that one species affects the other. The behavior of one species is transferred to the other, and in the end of Happy Feet, you know, even the aliens, the humans, are dancing around on the Antarctic ice. And the other element is Antarctica, because this is one of the great secrets of ufology. Antarctica is key to the mystery of ufology.
Why is that? Why is it key?
Well, you know, way back when UFOs were first being studied, the Arctic regions are the regions where these events were, mass events were being tracked. One of them was the ghost rockets of Scandinavia, 1946, 47, before Roswell. Hundreds of these craft were seen over Scandinavia, usually flying from east to west. There was a story of the recovery of a UFO crash in Norway that was revealed to Dorothy Kilgallen by the Minister of Defense, Great Britain, who at that time was Lord Louis Mountbatten. When Admiral Byrd went with his expedition High Jump down to South America, it was supposed to be a year-long expedition, and they came back, a flotilla, a fleet, a task force was sent down with 8,000 Marines, and they came back in 4 months when they were expected to be down there for a year. They lost equipment, they lost men. A very mysterious operation. When Admiral Byrd came back to Washington, he was quarantined for 5 days in Bethesda Naval Hospital. And he was rather upset by the way he was treated, Bethesda Naval Hospital is the same place where James Forrestal, Secretary of Defense, supposedly jumped out his bedroom window. And it took 55 years before I got the file, and it reveals that there were no bed sheets at Bethesda. Okay, the story about Forrestal was that he tied bed sheets together to hang himself and threw himself out his bedroom window 17 stories up in Bethesda Naval Hospital. Well, about 3 years ago, I got my hands on the actual Board of Inquiry, the whole report, and he did not go out his bedroom window. He went out a galley window, and he did not have bed sheets tied around his neck. He had his the belt of his night robe garroted around his neck. There was a broken ashtray on the floor, under the bed, and on the bed. And the ashtrays I'm talking about are those big steel ashtray holders that they had in the 50s. It was a big steel thing with a handle with a huge glass ashtray in the center. Well, that thing was toppled, and it was broken. And the other strange thing is that the Navy orderly reported that after he found him missing, he sat in the dark smoking a cigarette in Forrestal's room before he reported it. So, and then Admiral Byrd's death is very strange, too. Admiral Byrd disappeared because, I won't get into because. Admiral Byrd made a deal with National Geographic magazine to write a story about Operation High Jump. And he was negotiating this story, and he went to meet with the editor. He never showed up. And 3 days later, they found him unconscious in a warehouse and apparently died. Dehydration, heart attack, nobody really knows. But it's one of the strangest stories that I ever read. Antarctica is very important in all this, not only for the Neuschwabenland legend about the German base down in New Swabia. Neues Schwabenland means New Swabia. Swabia was the area of Germany where the original German tribes evolved and developed and then spread out. And there's a lot of interesting stuff. Lake Volga. Lake Volga is very interesting down there. The Russians have a research base. They have found a frozen lake under the ice with liquid water in it. And they believe that that water may still contain life forms from thousands and thousands of years ago that existed before the lake froze over.
Oh, yeah. Lake Vostok.
Oh, excuse me. Lake Vostok.
Yeah.
You're right. Correct. Lake Vostok. That's it. And you know what? Nobody's allowed there. And, of course, they have to worry that perhaps what is under the lake would be something alien to us now, you know, perhaps microbes, parasites, bacteria that existed thousands of years ago and disappeared in the rest of the earth and has it's still vibrant down there. But that's a mysterious one.
Well, I'll tell you something else mysterious about that lake. On the north end of that lake, right near the shore and extending up onto the shore, they mapped a magnetic anomaly that's 65 miles by 45 miles square.
Mm, that's very interesting.
And what happened was, this is what caused the closure of the area.
Mm-hmm.
They flew over the lake they were doing MRI images of the lake and so they could see what the contours were underneath, mm-hmm. On the floor of the lake. And they were using very powerful magnetometers. When they flew over, everything was fine till they got to this north end. And when they got to the north end of that lake, their magnetometers just jumped off the scale. And they thought there was some malfunction. So they landed, tested, recalibrated, tested. Everything seemed fine. They flew over the lake again and got exactly the same result.
Wow.
And they've never told, they've never released any pictures of what those MRIs show, mm-hmm. and they've never told what is that anomaly, mm-hmm. but it's a very, very strong, energetic, magnetic anomaly, 65 by 45 miles square. They did immediately halt all of the JPL exploration that was going on. They were doing experiments, planning to experiment with some drilling material or drilling techniques that they had planned to use on Mars.
Wow.
And they halted all of that. They ended it. And there was a press conference at NASA. I believe it was at NASA, but there was a press conference in which a NASA spokesperson said that it was all halted due to the orders of the NSA. That person was relieved of her job.
Wow.
And they came back and said, well, she misspoke. She meant NASA, NASA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I keep saying wow because, as usually happens when you and I get together, we have information that's complementary to each other. And I don't mean like complimentary, like you're such a great guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's okay, too. You can say
we
that.
We have two pieces of the puzzle here.
Yeah.
But here, I just told you the story of this event in Texas where a well-known ufologist was railroaded, you know, and mm-hmm. You know, for child abuse. This same ufologist told me what you have just told me about Lake Vostok, except mm-hmm. that it was in New York State. He was investigating a region of New York State where he found magnetic anomalies underground, and he mapped them. And he believes that there is something buried under these hills in upstate New York near Newburgh.
All right. A break is taking over. When we come back, we'll wrap up with what we're talking about there in New York, and then we'll open the telephone lines. We'll be back, folks, right after this. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Robert, you were telling us about this research that was being done about a magnetic anomaly in upstate New York.
Yep. There's an area near Wallkill, New York, and there are these two hills there. One is called Mount Adam, the other one's called Mount Eve. It's associated with the Pine Bush area. And I was informed that this geologist had found a magnetic anomaly right in this region, and he had mapped it. And he actually asked me to go up there to the region and to inquire of a farmer whether he was willing to sell some of the land so that they could do excavations to extract this object, which he claims, which the geologist said was there, at a depth indicating that it was buried 50,000 years ago, and that this object is still beaming out signals as if it's a locator beacon or a homing device, or, yes, exactly, a homing device, like a VOR mm-hmm. that would lead an aircraft to a particular region or a point. And he believed that this thing was still sending out signals, which is the reason why there's so many UFO sightings in that area of New York, upstate New York.
Wow.
Near Newburgh.
Okay. You and I will continue talking, but I want to open up the telephone lines, and let me give those telephone numbers out. If you are able to call without it costing you long distance, okay, if you're on a calling plan where you can do that, please use this number, 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580. If you need to use our toll-free number, you may do so, and you do that by calling 888-223-4599. Let me give it to you again, 888-223-4599. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, okay, so you live in Europe or you live in Asia or Australia or wherever, but you're not in Canada, you're not in the USA, you can go to my website, scroll down, you'll see a link that says flash message, and you can just send us a flash message, okay? And when you send us a flash message, it's called that because the notice starts flashing on my monitor over here to the right, and I know that you've sent me a message. I'll read it, and we'll respond to it as required, okay? So let's go to the telephone, and let's see. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Robert. How you doing?
Hi, I'm fine. Good to hear you.
Yeah. Sent a couple of emails with you a few times there. Do you have any guesses of what the most viewed story today on CNN.com is?
The most viewed story on CNN.com?
Yeah, take a guess.
I was watching CNN today, and the only thing I saw was Obama. With the CIA.
Well, the number one story right now, the number one viewed and number one emailed story is astronaut claims we are not alone.
Oh, is this Edgar Mitchell?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've got a little story to tell about Edgar Mitchell. I met Edgar Mitchell.
Well,
I
want to suggest is, I know people don't have very much time, and me, I had a few extra minutes, and so what I did was I called up my local news station here, and I told them, I said, do you guys realize what you're missing out on? Look at the amount of people that have interest in this subject, and I don't have my hopes up on, I mean, it's, I'm kind of taking it with a grain of salt, but I might as well just try, and so I called them, and she said, well, I'm looking, and I don't know if they're going to go anywhere with it, but people would just do little things like that, then maybe we can. I mean, I'm not hoping for full disclosure right yet, right away, but as long as we can, I just wish the mainstream media would start reporting on things that really matter. You know, it's they've dropped the ball for so many years. It's just, you know, I'm not a real big fan of CNN, but at least there's a story that's gaining some popularity. And this is coming from the X conference. I guess there was a successful press conference there at the X conference. Yeah. So that's why I passed that along to you. And also, the question I had for you about was about this the UN meeting. It's kind of just funny. If it didn't happen, if the UN meeting did not happen, then why would they tell people to be silent about it? You know, it doesn't make any sense. They tell people to be silent about it, and they take away their security oaths, and they threaten them. Why would they do that if it didn't happen?
There you go, doing critical thinking. Now, you know that's dangerous. Ryan, you know, thanks for the call.
May I ask your name again?
His name is Ryan.
Ryan, right, yes. Okay, Ryan, you're just the type of person that I really love to talk to, because you're not just a listener, you're a doer. And you're doing exactly what I've, as Kevin knows, I've asked the public to get on the phone, make calls, call your congressman, call the news company, tell them the people want the truth and the people are interested. Now, my ploy in calling the news is I have contact with Fox News here in New York, and I got them on the bandwagon by telling them, look, people are interested in UFOs, and there's money to be made by people watching your program, and people will watch if your advertising is going to go up because people are interested. You cover UFOs, and you're going to make money. You always appeal to their greed, and they will come along.
Well, that's why they're in business.
Yeah,
all right, let's take this next call.
It's an entertainment business.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello,
hi,
Robert.
Kevin.
Nice. Always love hearing from you. Oh, boy. We're talking UFO crashes and mainstream media. And oh, boy, let me tell you, I don't trust anything coming out of the mainstream media just because of the fact of who owns the darn things.
Yeah.
Robert, I think, have I ever told you about the purported UFO crash that we had up in Northern Ontario back in 1954?
I haven't heard about that one recently. Tell me about it.
It's something that I brought up on the Kevin Smith Show and other radio shows back sometime last year, and it happened I haven't looked into it for quite some time, but there was a crash that happened in September 1954. About I'd have to say maybe about I forget exactly how far north of it was around Cochrane, Ontario. It was about close to my hometown. And it was a bunch of people that were hunting. One of the people was actually related to me, actually. And him and a couple of buddies, they were gone out hunting, fishing, and whatnot. And they saw this huge, big disc of fire come crashing down. It crashed about 3 miles north of where they were. And they went to go check it out. And after they went and investigated it, they had a few Canadian military and American military folks come and see them at their homes and told them to keep their mouth shut. One of the guys, he ended up in a mental institution after this happened, and the other one, he ended up getting real sick afterwards and dying, and Mr. Boyd, the one that is related to me, he took it to his grave.
Sounds just like the story that I told a little while ago about the North Carolina crash. Go on.
The Iroquois Falls newspaper and the Cochrane newspaper, they reported seeing a strange craft and then reported seeing Canadian and American Air Force planes chasing after it afterwards.
Well, as I say, you know, what's interesting about the recent times is these air engagements have been going on since the 1950s, and the Air Force was trying to bring the craft down by hook, by crook, or by crashing into them. You know, they gave orders to shoot them down or bring them down.
Well, I guess we lost him.
Oh, okay, we're still on.
Yeah.
So this is a very interesting thing. There was Walesville. You know, these air engagements. Let me just a couple more have come to mind. There was an incident of a jet that was abandoned in flight because in 1954 or so near Walesville, New York. An interceptor was sent up after a UFO, and something happened. He was beamed with something. The cockpit grew intolerably hot, and the fellow ejected, and the airplane crashed in the local area. The incident in Iran is also fascinating. The F-4 incident of September 1976.
Yeah.
General Jafari, whom I met in Washington, told me he went after this UFO, and it fired something at him. I mean, it wasn't just that something was, like a light was flashed on him. He saw something leave this mothership, you might call it, a white object that came right at him directly. And that's when his electronics malfunctioned, radar didn't work, instruments didn't work, radio didn't work, and he broke off the engagement and flew away. Then it came back. So these things have been going on for a long time, but it's rare that they come down into the lower atmosphere. And that's what's unique about these events that are being seen from the ground. And you mentioned Ed Grimsley regularly in during the interviews or advertisements for this upcoming conference or night. He's doing fabulous work. He's taken some of the best video, if not the best video, of the Black Triangle ever taken. And I admire that kind of work. It's very professional. And, you know, I congratulate him. I'm one of his biggest fans.
All right, let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes. My name is James. I'm calling from upstate New York, Monticello, about 20 minutes outside of Pine Bush.
Okay, James, we're going to have to ask you to speak directly into your phone and speak up. Okay. We're barely getting you.
This is James from Monticello, New York, about 20 minutes outside of Pine Bush. I was wondering if you could give a little more information on the magnetic anomaly that's been found out there.
Well, basically, I gave as much as I was able to gather. It's rather large, several hundred feet. It's triangular. And according to my geologist friend, his estimate was that it's buried in a layer that was covered over at 50,000 years ago, which would be interesting to compare with the time that Lake Vostok froze over. Because this thing about the magnetic anomaly is a very interesting element.
Yeah.
My friend thought that this thing was a craft, triangular in form, extremely large, and buried under a region alongside a road. I think the caller hung up, but he would know this area where there's a cemetery and there's a farm owned by a Korean gentleman. So just before this tragedy unfolded, we were talking, and he was asking me to go up there to discuss purchasing a plot of land so that excavation could begin to try to get down into those substrates where this object is embedded.
All right, let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. It's Mike from Kentucky. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Mike.
I know a lot about that John Ford incident because I was involved with John at the time, and I posted a lot of the stuff that was going on for him on my BBS at the time, SpaceLink BBS. And so I have video footage of that incident that took place in the park.
Right, that's what I was referring to. I got to see that footage and the images of the fire department and the state police, and then the closing of the whole area. Can you tell us more? I think that my synopsis was accurate, and I think it's kind of crazy to think that somebody would steal radioactive dust to send it to some kind of state official that he had a grudge against. I mean, can you give me a little more information on that?
The story that I had on that was that John had hired these two thugs, if you will, to do this for him, and he was supposedly putting that radium dust in the guy's toothpaste. That was the story they had going around.
And now, who in the world could believe such a far-fetched story that anybody could? I mean, it's unfathomable to me.
Irrational.
And you know, Alfred Lemberg and a whole group of ufologists really still care a lot about this case. And I think it's about time that that people like myself and others should be bringing this to public attention. Well, that was the biggest railroad job I'd ever seen.
John is still in a psychiatric ward up there. And
you know, yeah. We mentioned this element that the people go crazy and then they get institutionalized. This has been a traditional way of dealing with nonconformists, people who, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and in Canada in particular, there are a lot of people in Canadian institutions whose only crime, if you pardon the expression, was seeing a UFO and stating that they saw a UFO and they believed they saw a UFO. This was grounds for institutionalizing people and medicating them. And I've had an incident myself. I do counsel people who have had UFO experiences, either sightings or abductions. And I try to help them, you know, and one of the ways is to understand, try to understand their situation. And I've actually worked with people through an intermediary who were in institutions in Canada. And it's kind of funny. I have one case which I consider one of my greatest successes. And this dealt with a lady who was a very successful producer and writer and a successful woman in Canada. She went to visit some Native American Indians, and on her way to the house, she saw a UFO descending right close to the house. She went over to the house and beat on the door, and her friends were so scared they would not open the door. They left her outside. She described seeing something that looked like two Frisbees edge to edge counter-rotating. And she passed out. She was out for 20 minutes. And after that, her life started to fall apart. So she lost her husband. She lost her job. You know, it's a common story. And then she was institutionalized. And my friend who worked with her started to tell me about her and sent me some of her writings and some of her letters. And I sent messages back. And the lady said to her, you know, she had this real negative image of herself. And she said to my colleague, she said, "What can you do when you can't do nothing?" You know? And my friend wrote that to me, and I wrote back to her, "Tell D that what you can do when you can't do nothing is you can do anything you want." And this was like a little neuro-linguistic programming nugget. The lady's question was, "What can you do when you can't do nothing?" Well, the answer to that is you can do anything you want. Well, I sent that message to her, and that message transformed her. And she was able to leave the institution and go to the next stage of being, as they call it, rehabilitated. And many people suffer from consequences of UFO experiences or extraterrestrial abduction phenomena. And there's a question. There's a sentence that has to be analyzed, and if you're able to ask the right question, you can come up with the answer that will break the psychological blocks. It can be repressed memories. It can be visual recollections. It can be auditory information that lies hidden, embedded in the subconscious. But there are ways of successfully transcending the negative aspects of UFO exposure, and there are many. Sound is one of them. Radiation is another. Light, which is another form of radiation. All of these things affect the very fabric of your being. A person is altered. That's why I coined the word somatic imprint, that not only is this a psychological thing that has happened to the individual, but there is a physical change. The very fabric of life is altered, perhaps by radiation in these encounters. Sound can kill, and sound can heal. If people are interested in the healing aspects of sound, I recommend Googling or YouTubing cymatics, C-Y-M-A-T-I-C-S, cymatics. It's a remarkable field and deals with the healing properties of sounds.
Well, I think all of us remember those ads that used to be on TV where you would have a singer sing a note and a glass would shatter, and they would ask, sure, is it real or is it Memorex?
Mm-hmm.
Remember those?
Yes.
Well, and that's based on real physics. That sound can shatter glass.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it can be used for healing or it can be used for hurting.
Yep.
You know, sound is very powerful.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? While we're on that subject, our government is developing instruments that use ultrasonics. And they're, you know, they're developing anti-personnel weapons to be used against American citizens in crowd control.
Now, how do you know it's to be, tell us how you know it's to be used against American citizens. How are you sure of that?
Well, because it's a domestic product. It's a kind of a U.S. Army crowd control experiment that's been, it's actually on YouTube. They can aim this thing at you, and you will feel incredible heat as if you're burning.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be instantly subjugated. You won't be able to function. They had a reporter. They had a reporter who tested the thing, and it's hundreds of feet away. It looks like some of those gadgets they used to make for 1950s science fiction movies.
Yeah, it's got a dish
or a square object with the probe sticking out.
Mm-hmm.
But they call it non-lethal weapons. But I've seen a lot of people killed by non-lethal weapons like tasers recently, which bothers me to no end.
Well, you know, I got an opinion about tasers.
Let's have it.
Well, I don't know. There will be a lot of cops listening to me that disagree with this. I see absolutely no law enforcement use for tasers. Nothing viable. What I hear from guys that are serving as cops now, they say, well, you know, that's so that we don't have to fight as often. Well, see, that's kind of like telling me, if I'm the football coach, Coach, I want to play football, but I don't want to get hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that case, get off my field. You know, football is a tough game. And when cops say, well, you know, we use the taser so we don't have to fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that goes with a job.
Oh,
and, you know, sometimes you have to...
You know, and...
You got to tackle people sometimes.
Adrenaline does to a human body. When you blast somebody with 50,000 volts, you may incapacitate them, you know, for a few minutes. But you're charging those people up with a super dose of adrenaline, which is the basis of the fight or flight reaction. And if you are not allowing the person flight, what you're going to have on your hands is the biggest fight you ever saw, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I see happening in these airport incidents, like the death of the Polish or Russian gentleman up in a Canadian airport, and then that poor lady, one of my neighbors down in Phoenix. That was a heinous act. I don't care how they try to justify it.
Well, I just overall, I do not see a justifiable, this is my opinion, and there will be a lot of cops that will email me and tell me I'm wrong, but my opinion, I don't see any justification for the use of tasers. Just my opinion, and I'm entitled to it. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Robert Morningstar. We will open up the telephone lines for you again in just a moment, but first, I want to read this flash message that we've gotten from the United Kingdom, and this flash message from Nigel says, can I ask your guest, if UFOs are so advanced, then how do they crash like the one at Roswell? And also, why were alien abductions more popular in the 1980s than any other decade.
Well, with regard to Roswell, my belief about Roswell is that it was a Trojan horse, that was an intentional crash. And the reason was to make an overt statement to the United States government. We're here, and we want you to know that we're here, and what are you going to do about it? And the second aspect of it is this aspect of reverse engineering. Okay, and this is strictly my theory. We have an alien entity, an alien civilization, that has designs upon our culture. And in a long-term plan, they want to make us more like them. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
So what better way than to crash a device that they know that we're such curious creatures. Human beings are extremely curious, innovative creatures. We like to know how clocks work on the inside. And so knowing that we have this propensity for curiosity and what we now call reverse engineering, figuring out how things work, that they planted this object so that we would take it apart and realize that we had no way of building such a craft at that time the way we did things. And in order to build such a craft and such things as microchips, computers, fiber optics, that we would have to re-engineer not only our whole industry, but our whole society itself to retool our entire society to be able to produce this object. And in producing this object and retooling our entire society, we would be made to be more like them societally. And that's what I see happening in the United States today. America has been turned into an anthill. And ants have only three categories. You have workers, you have majors, and you have the queen. Okay? So I feel that our society is being re-engineered and restructured more along the lines of an insect society. And in the process, we are losing some of our humanity. That's my take on the Roswell crash.
Okay, hang on just a second. Caller, if you will, just hang on for a minute more. We're going to get this answer from Robert, and then we'll bring you up online. Okay, what about the 1980s being more active for alien abduction?
I don't think it was more active. I don't think it was popular. I think it was a time when communications had developed where the word could get out that these things were happening. My first exposure to alien abductions happened in the 1960s, 1962, as a matter of fact. And it was my little brother who was taken in upstate New York. And my brother had no word to express what this experience was like. There was no UFO scene, but these little creatures came and did things to him, and my brother was seven. And what does a seven-year-old boy know to describe something that has never been experienced in his life? He said to me, there were three little munchkins outside the window. And they had big black eyes, and they looked at me, and they said to me, you don't see us, we're not here, we're only flowers. You don't see us, we're not here, we're only flowers. And he said they scared the hell out of me, and I couldn't sleep, and my brother became very, very emotionally disturbed after that experience. But this is 1962, and what happened is that this was kept secret. You know, people wouldn't talk about things like this openly. People would think you were crazy. So what happened is that the events continued to unfold, and by 1980, it had happened so often in so many parts of the world that word got out. It's kind of what I call a critical mass. And then a person, Whitley Strieber and Betty and Barney Hill.
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like the dam breaking.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the straw that broke the camel's back, or that last drop of water that burst the dam. It started to come out, and once people heard those stories, they said, hey,
that happened to me. I was afraid to talk about it. But if Whitley Strieber can talk about it in communion and Betty and Barney Hill are not afraid to tell, I'm not afraid to tell either. So that's what I think happened. I don't think it was popular. I still don't think alien abduction is popular.
All right, let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Hi, it's Paul from Oshawa in Ontario.
Yes, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call, Kevin. And hi, Robert. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Good to hear your voice.
I have a good question for you here. Based on your experience and you're in the center of talking to a lot of people and in the field, I notice that a lot of sightings have been increasing around the world, and I've also noticed in the mainstream, it seems to be picking up a lot more, even with the Vatican of last year, May 13th, the Vatican agreeing it's okay to believe in aliens.
Yep.
That I seem to see a race happening now here that it looks like maybe we have cosmic visitors outside us preparing to make contact, and at the same token, it looks apparent that authority is releasing the media to say it's okay to talk about it. What's your take on all this, Robert?
Well, I agree with your view, and I'm glad you brought up the Pope, because I feel very proud to have written to the Pope 3 days before that happened. And how it transpired was that after the UN meeting was made known and the subsequent events unfolding, an admiral, a French Navy Admiral Pinon, wrote an open letter along with six other well-known French ufologists, I mean top scientists, calling for France to own up and disclose. I worked for 2 weeks or 10 days translating it from French into English. I published it on UFO Digest. And after it came out, I said to myself, you know somebody who needs to know about this? It's the Pope. And I happen to have Pope Benedict XVI's email address. So I sent it to the Pope. And I thought, well, you know, this is going to be interesting. And I was shocked 3 days later to get the word that the Vatican had come out and the official astronomer of the Vatican had made that statement that extraterrestrials are part of God's creation and it's okay for Catholics to believe in it. I don't see any conflict with faith and belief in UFOs. So I'm kind of glad that you brought that up. The other one was earlier, the gentleman, Ryan, called about Edgar Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Statements. Well, I wrote to Edgar Mitchell last year, and in a very, you know, respectful and tactful way, and I asked him about certain photos that he had taken on the moon, and in particular, two photos of the same object, and it was during this period of time when then Commander Mitchell was assigned to take panoramic view of the moon. He was supposed to stand in one place and segment by segment turn in place to take a 360 degree panoramic view of the site. However, I found two photographs of the same object, which is called the Very Large Rock. But it indicates to me that somehow he stopped to take two pictures of this very large rock, but he also ran forward. He ran forward at one point to get a closer picture of the rock. However, this closer picture of the rock is unique because there's something else in the sky, a rather large kind of, I don't know, asteroid shoe-shaped object. So I asked him about these object. At first I asked, who took the picture? Did you or Commander Shepard take the picture? And he wrote back, I took the picture. And I said, and if you took the picture, what is that object in the center of the picture just above the rock? And he wrote back very tactfully. He said, I see nothing unusual about these photographs. Everything I see there is typical of lunar terrain phenomena, which was basically a nice way of saying, oh, you know, there's nothing unusual about this picture. Those things were always there. So I was taken aback, and I thought, well, at least he wrote back to me. I had met him once before in New York, and we had an interesting encounter there. But I thought, well, you know, I tried. I sent him the pictures, and he sent me a nice, tactful, diplomatically worded reply, and I went to sleep. And I guess it was 2 days later, I woke up in the morning, and this one I really got shaky knees, because I got news that he was on Kerrang Radio and had announced on British radio that, you know, there are UFOs, and, you know, the government's been covering it up, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, holy mackerel. I really did. I sat down. I said, I couldn't take it. It's amazing, you know, and I believe that this is the power of the word, the power of truth. You know, truth is seamless. You speak the truth. Just speak the truth. You've got nothing to worry about.
That is the truth.
It cannot be debunked. You know?
All right, let's go back to the telephone. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin.
Yes.
This is Tony from Norman, Oklahoma.
Hi, Tony.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, sir.
That's good. It's been a long time.
It has indeed. What's on your mind?
Robert was talking about John Ford earlier.
Yeah.
I knew John Ford personally. Been over to his house many times.
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff they were saying about him was all garbage.
I agree.
They said that his house was full of guns, and he was anti-government and everything like that. I don't know how many hours I spent in his house with him and his mother and my brother, and he never showed any signs of any kind of anti-government or anything like that.
And it's not against the law to have guns.
Not yet.
No, he had a couple of rifles.
Mm-hmm. It's not against the law to have rifles. Those are the ones you can have. It's handguns.
Right,
they don't
but
like.
From the way...
Okay, guys, we have a break taking over, and we will have to continue when we come back from the break. Tony, if you want to hang on, I'll pick you up right after the break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach, my friends. That means we only have a few minutes left. Tony, are you still with us?
I sure am.
All right. You were saying that you know John Ford and that you personally, from your point of view, the things that were said about him, the charges that were brought against him were totally untrue.
I believe so, yes.
And
said I spent many hours in his house, and the police the day that he was arrested and all that, they were talking about how many guns they took from his house and things like that, and I don't know where any of that came from, but I never saw any kind of paperwork, paraphernalia about anti-government or anti-U.S., never saw anything about a large cache of guns, never saw anything like that.
All right.
I agree. I visited his house. I saw no guns. The gentleman smoked a pipe. He was quite affable. He was interested in his subject. I found him the most harmless person imaginable.
He had those two rifles in the case right there when you walked in. Remember?
I didn't see them. No, I didn't see them.
Anyway.
But I wasn't looking for guns. You know, I was looking for UFOs.
Yeah. Well, he just had them on display right there in his living room.
Yeah, and that's quite different to have a display as opposed to having, you know, a firearm ready at the ready, you know?
Exactly.
No, you know, this is railroading, and the media jumps on things like this, is instantly believing the government as if the government is the paragon of truth, and anyone who is in ufology knows that that is a fallacy.
Right.
You know? And yes, the Clinton era was a very strange era, you know? So many things. Clinton portrayed himself as a great, liberal, freedom-loving individual, but some of the most heinous acts of government occurred during his administration.
Yeah. Well, particularly with UFO people and with people who had what you might call alternative beliefs.
Yeah.
Not mainstream beliefs. Mm-hmm. It was pretty tough. That is.
Remember, folks, conformity is the death of freedom. You know, when I grew up, being an individual and your individual gifts and talents were the greatest thing that you could confer on this country. And we were nurtured to think of ourselves as individuals and develop our gifts. Somehow in the 1980s, conformity became the norm. And to stray from the conformity and the political correctness is tantamount to a crime.
All right, we have time for maybe one more call, and the telephone number is 502-539-9580 or 888-223-4599. If you're outside the USA, outside of Canada, you can send a flash message by going to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. And send a flash message, but you have to do it like right now, because we're racing toward the end of this show. All right, now Robert, we got a lot of 2009 left to go,
mm-hmm.
And there are you've already given out some awards for instance, Journalist of the Year,
yes,
or Reporter of the Year. What are some of the other awards yet to be conferred?
Well, you're squeezing it out of me, but I'll tell you. I am going to give two Lifetime Achievement Awards, and one of those goes to Nick Pope,
mm-hmm.
for extracting the, helping to extract the MOD UFO files. And the other one will be to A.J. Gavard. They're going to share this,
mm-hmm.
for convincing the Brazilian government to release their UFO files, which I downloaded today. I'd like to thank Frank Warren for his work, UFO Chronicles. He's a wonderful resource. And the Operation Prato, which is Operation Saucer files, have been released, and I went over them this morning. And fortunately, I'm very happy to say that I can read Portuguese. I can't speak it, but I can read Spanish, French, and the Romance languages. And this is a remarkable dossier of files that they've been able to extract. And I'm always sure to remind people that people died for these files, especially the Brazilian files, the death of Capitan Holandia, or Holanda,
mm-hmm.
who was found hanged by his belt from his bedside. You know, this is another strange. When you hang yourself, you usually do it from the ceiling. This man was found dead with his belt around his neck, hanged at his bedside.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody believes that anybody's going to commit suicide that way, I have a bridge, a couple of them in New York, that I'd like to sell you.
You
know? They're very nice. They still work. Some have subways.
Well, there are many, many, many strange deaths.
Years and years and years of work, and they got their governments to release the files. Now, we Americans have months and months and months of work, but we have to do the same thing here.
Yeah, well, do you really think it's going to happen?
I think it's happening. I think it's just the process of the old guard dying away, the new the new guard taking over, and I have hopes. I have hopes.
Well, I've been, like everyone else, hearing for years and years and years that it's just around the corner, this is going to be the year, and it never happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that may be because I think what you said earlier is the case, and that is they don't want to reveal how much they don't know.
Yep. And listen, there's something strange going on here. The Obama administration has kind of said they are cutting the funds on interceptor aircraft like the YF-22,
mm-hmm.
as if we don't need airplanes anymore. That's kind of strange to me. And those are hints of something going on. You know,
hadn't thought about that.
We don't need interceptors anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Either we've got some technology that's beyond interceptor technology, or we have figured out that nobody's going to attack us and we don't need interceptors anymore. That's a very strange development in the last couple of weeks there. But I would like to remind you, when you say that, you know, we have hopes that the government's going to do this or not going to do this, and it never happens. But, you know, it was a government initiative that got this UN meeting going. It was a U.S. naval officer who spearheaded it, and I think it's been extremely successful. And it has to happen in stages. And I think that the first stage that has to be achieved is, first, drop the skepticism and create an open mind. Once you've created an open mind in the general public, then you can start to feed an open mind, but you're never going to get anywhere with the closed mind that they engineered intentionally, mm-hmm. since the Robertson Report, you know?
So they have to kind of undo what they've done.
Yeah, they have to undo that first part, which mm-hmm. is the machinery of ridicule, the institutionalization of skepticism, and the parade of skeptibunkers that they've trained, neurolinguistic programmers, quite adept at deflecting argument and debate from the actual topic, and being able to throw red herrings, interrupt, ridicule, etc., that we saw like on Larry King Live. I thought that was...
Robert, I wish we had more time, but we don't. The end of the show is upon us. I want to thank you for being with us, and if you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment. Always fascinating when Robert Morningstar is with us, and I'm glad that you were here as well. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.